Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 106. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, and I'm David Todd from The Hammer Speaks. Dave and I just wanted to start out this show by thanking everybody who contributed with a new PayPal account that we put up on SteelersDepot.com that we've mentioned here on the podcast. I've tried to email everybody back. I haven't gotten to everybody yet, but just so you know, Dave and I are deeply touched, for real. This is important stuff to us. We love doing it. The fact that so many of you decided that our work was worthwhile enough to chip in a few dollars, and in some cases more than a few dollars, really, it's thoughtful of you, and it's really meaningful to us. Dave, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, just very thankful and overwhelmed, really. And I think David and I want to start off real quick for anybody that's kind of new to following us, give us a little background of how the show came about. And a quick background on both of us real quick, huh, Dave?
Yeah. A couple people asked in their donations just kind of, you know, how we were making a living. And just for those of you who know, Dave pointedly made a point of that I went to Yale, as the Yale kid was signed as an undrafted free agent. And he didn't know that. I went to Yale, and Dave, I was fortunate enough, you may not know, I also went to Harvard. I went to Harvard Business School. So my pedigree looks good, my bank account less good. I worked in New York on Wall Street for 15 or so years. I didn't make my fortune. I had a good time, and it was a great experience. But, you know, I turned in my early 40s, decided that I didn't want to stay in New York the rest of my life, and I moved back to Pittsburgh, where I grew up and where my family's been season ticket holders. And I was fortunate enough to run into some of the right people to get the opportunity to do some work in radio. And as some of you know, I did the Pirates pre and post game last year. I covered the draft for the Steelers this year. I do some work on 970 ESPN. I'm trying to turn that into a larger career. It doesn't quite pay the bills right now, but it's something I love and have a passion for. And obviously it fits right in with this. And Dave can tell you his background and then tell you how we actually hooked up, which came about on Twitter, believe it or not.
Yeah, well, I have a background in coffee, several years in coffee. Owned a coffee company for about 11 years, started it from the ground floor. Built that up nice and sold that off, and at the same time was buying some real estate at the same time. And before the economy turned around in the real estate market, I was able to sell four of those properties off. I still own three. Still a landlord, I guess you could say, of three of them.
Slumlord. Slumlord.
Nah, they're not slums now, but I tell you, they do have some work involved that fortunately I'm able to contract some out to some local people here around here. But that affords me the opportunity to sit on Twitter all day and bother my wife. And my passion, of course, is Steelers too, lifelong Steelers fan. So, you know, that's kind of a synopsis on both of us. And the way the Terrible Podcast came about, I of course have ran Steelers Depot for years and always was looking to try to get into podcasting, did not know too much about it. I knew that I wanted a co-host, and I knew I wanted somebody, you know, that had a radio background. I stumbled across your 104 podcast page, Dave, I think is what it was. Yep. Some old Pirates podcast that luckily had been archived up there on the site. Unfortunately, I think they removed them now. But I listened to a few of those, and I liked David's knowledge of he was talking baseball, of course. I love that knowledge. He definitely had, you could tell he had the radio background. So I kind of seeked him out on Twitter and got the dialogue going with him there, and boom, we got right into it. And here we are a couple hundred podcasts later, and he still hasn't left me yet. So
David and I have yet to meet. So that's
we have yet to meet.
We figure we might be better off that way.
Probably would, because as many know, follow me on Twitter, I have OCD and ADD combined, and I'm a classic insomniac, so I'm not too pleasant to be around at some times. But I'm thankful to have David. He's been, I tell you, his guidance in this thing. Basically the show director, if you will, throughout this whole thing. There's no way this podcast would ever be where it's at right now if not for him.
Well, nice of you to say, and it's been great stuff. Dave threw out the name, The Terrible Podcast. I fell in love with it immediately. I thought it was clever and witty and probably represented our talents at the time. So that's it. We'll get on with the stuff, but that's a little background. And once again, thanks for your donations. Dave, the big stuff this week started out Friday. All the kids were in town. Rookie minicamp, all the draftees, the undrafted free agents, which didn't turn out to be 10. There turned out to be 12 of them. And then a group of guys coming in for tryouts, guys like Darren Thomas, the quarterback from Oregon State, and some other names, that, you know, guys you and I weren't particularly familiar with, to be honest about it. They go out to the south side. There were some guys involved in this who weren't active last year. A guy like Baron Batts, there were some questions that maybe he decided not to participate or wasn't healthy. Baron Batts was on the injured reserve last year, the Steelers' seventh-round pick out of Texas Tech, right, Dave? I think Texas Tech. The running back who tore his ACL, he wasn't allowed to participate because he accrued that full NFL season. There were other guys who weren't on the roster all year, or I think if they were on the practice squad, I think they were allowed to participate. So there were a group of guys there, and they had things going Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Absolutely, and, you know, we don't get, you know, you got to remember this is football in shorts, and these are rookies out there and first-year players. There wasn't too much information to be gleaned overall. You know, a couple
beat writers there tweeting was about the extent of it, and an article or two in the Trib and the Post-Gazette.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing we can get from this overall, DeCastro lined up at right guard. That was to be expected. Mike Adams was the first-team left tackle. I think Malecki, the kid out of Pitt who was on the practice squad last year, John Malecki was the first-team center with that group. I think Travis Turner might have been the right tackle in that group as well. You know, a couple people sticking out, you know, just based on some reports. A few people have said Sean Spence, the Steelers' third-round pick, the linebacker out of Miami, sure seemed to be moving around pretty quickly out there. Myron Roll, who was listed on the Steelers' roster as a cornerback, is actually a safety, and I was kind of expecting that.
He doesn't. Nobody goes from linebacker to cornerback.
He was listed as, yeah, and he basically played a sort of a hybrid linebacker, strong safety at Florida State. So you had to know that might have been a mix up there. Wes Lyons indeed has been moved to tight end, and this kid supposedly weighs 250, 260 pounds now. It's not hard to pick him out of a photo either on Steelers.com from those mini camp photos. This guy's a big drink of water, but, you know, this guy's had his struggles over the years. He didn't catch on last year, of course, with the Steelers out of training camp and all. It's going to be tough for him to crack it again, the 53-man roster as a tight end again this year. So, you know, other than that and a few great interviews that we saw up on Steelers.com with a few of the top rookies and all, really not too much information to be gleaned out of this camp.
Dave, let me, as I mentioned, I talked to Jim Bowman, Mike Adams, offensive line coach from Ohio State, when I was on the 970 ESPN last Wednesday. He talked about Mike Adams flipping around during the course of his time at Ohio State, that he could relatively easily move over to right tackle, filled in on drills, did some things like that, was a left tackle. I've been relatively adamant that Mike Adams is a left tackle, and that's what he's going to be going forward. Now, I don't know if I've misread some of the tweets from some of the beat writers here in Pittsburgh, or they've just been commenting, but I thought I read something to the extent that Marcus Gilbert's going to be on the left side and Mike Adams might be on the right side. Can you clear that up for me?
I think it's speculation at this point, David, because, I mean, let's face it, Adams played left tackle at Ohio State. He opened up this rookie camp at left tackle. You know, I think they're going to move him around quite a bit, but I think it was Tonchokin through a tweet or through a report by Jim Wexel that said, you know, he's not so concerned about the strength of Adams right now. It's more of a finesse thing, showing the athletic ability to be able to handle the left tackle spot. And, you know, I think Tunch was kind of insinuating that you know, Adams is going to be a left tackle and until we probably see otherwise is kind of what I got from the whole thing. Now, granted, now, like I said in the previous podcast on Adams, this kid has all the tools. They're just scattered and they're not in the toolbox together. I think he does have to get functionally stronger, though. I think his core strength links. Maybe it's a lack of want at times, too, in a running game You know, I think he's fine, you know, as far as pass protection for the most part. He needs some technical things cleared out. But, you know, with Willie Colon signed, you know, long term, although a lot of us have been speculating for years that he could kick inside, I'm not convinced that's where his ultimate landing spot is. I think left tackle's his ultimate landing spot. And I think after, you know, who knows, 6, 7, 8 games through this season, Gilbert, who probably fits more naturally at right tackle spot, might go over there in the meantime. But I think long-term, Mike Adams is going to be a left tackle, David.
Yeah, that's what I've said, Dave. I'll be shocked if they move him around too much. There's no question. Look, Sean Kugler and Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert, they've got the time to figure this out. They've thought about it a lot already, I'm sure. It's clearly the most interesting thing going on with the Steelers coming in to when they come into OTAs, when they come into mini camps, when they go to camp in July. It is by far what I'm going to find this kind of whole process fascinating. Now, it might be fascinating for 5 minutes, and it just might be done and etched in stone, but it's going to be interesting to watch. The whole concept of Gilbert playing his rookie season at right tackle, potentially playing left tackle this year, and then flipping back to right tackle. I'm with you. Mike Adams is a left tackle. I'm not sure I'd even waste, you know, a lot of practices having him work on the right side. Position flexibility is vital. We've seen it. We saw it with Jonathan Scott. We see it when guys go down. Guys have to come in and play. And, again, they're not splitting the atom, but it's a little bit different playing right guard and left guard than it is right tackle and left tackle. Just the footwork, how you slide your feet, how you use your hands, what your objectives are, depending on who your quarterback is, blah, blah, blah. Those are things to watch. Mike Adams can play right tackle, but he is a guy longer term, as Dave said, I think, lined up and he's going to be a left tackle. So I'll be interested to see, because you and I are of the belief that he's probably not the guy who's going to line up at left tackle opening day, opening night in Denver. So if that's the case, then somebody else obviously needs to play that position. And will it be Marcus Gilbert or will it be somebody else? So certainly the most interesting thing, I think, to watch. And Dave, as you said, Sean Spence clearly impressed a few guys with his athleticism and, you know, kind of just his football sense.
Yeah, one other thing to tag on quickly about Mike Adams. I think, you know, depending on how Max Starks' rehabilitation goes and how Mike Adams develops in camp, if they end up signing Max Starks before the start of training camp there, that would probably lead you to believe that they're not overly confident of where Adams might be at to serve as a swing tackle initially. You know?
Yes, I agree with that.
But if they and who knows, you know, Max might just not be ready. But
or they might just say, look, he's not our guy. We're done. We're moving on.
So. Right. And yeah, but I think that could be a little of a telltale sign if indeed he is signed. Now, if he's not signed, there leaves more questions in your head of why that indeed was. But I think ultimately they draft. I mean, hey, you can't buy those type measurables on the outside. When you look at Marcus Gilbert overall, he just logically, the way he plays and looking back at his college tape at Florida, he's probably long-term right tackle. And if that's the case, I mean, Willie Colon's got to go somewhere, right? You didn't sign him to that long-term deal and then restructure this past offseason just to cut him. So, that leads you to believe that he'll be moving inside to one of those guard positions.
Yep, it's all going to be interesting stuff, and we will obviously keep you posted as we're watching it ourselves. Dave, you put an article up today about a tweet from Jason LaConfora. He said that the Steelers looked like they were going to make, they were in position to make a trade with the New York Jets, who had the 16th pick, obviously the Steelers picking at 24, to move up and take David DeCastro. Now, I need to eat some crow here, because I said that the Steelers didn't make a trade, so they weren't, you know, you can speculate that they would have moved up. But if a guy like Schefter or LaConfora is kind of confirming that this was in place, I give it a lot more credibility than I would otherwise. So maybe I'm wrong on this one. Maybe the Steelers really were going to move up. And the fact that the Jets thought they could move back and take either Irvin or Couples, and then Irvin went off the board at 15, right in front of the Jets at 16, they decided because both guys weren't there, they wanted to go ahead and take their guy. They did. And then the draft fell, obviously, the Steelers' way. If they're willing to go up 8 spots, and as you speculated, there are a million different ways things could have fallen had that not happened. They get their guy. They don't have to give up anything. you know, it's just it, they couldn't obviously they couldn't have been happier on draft night. We speculated on that, that it just it couldn't have worked out better, and this just confirms that to an even greater degree.
Yeah, and you know, I like Lockenfora, but you know, this is probably what it is right now. You're never going to get the Steelers to back up this report. Hard to say what parts the Jets have done as well too. But assuming this was correct, 8 spots is a reasonable jump that you can see the Steelers making. I thought all along. I never thought DeCastro would fall down that far. I thought maybe, you know, the 16th spot would have been amazing to me overall in the beginning. I thought maybe 20th was an act of God.
I think 21 to the Bengals, I think, was the last spot he would go. We figured.
Right, and if indeed this is the case, boy. Had the Seahawks not drafted Bruce Irvin, and had the Steelers indeed had to make that trade, and we can speculate if that would have cost a third and a fourth along.
Yeah, I think it definitely cost them a third.
You know, how the complexion of this whole draft might have changed for the Steelers. Would they have been willing at that point, assuming they did not have to give up their second, and assuming they would have had to give up maybe a third or a fourth or both or whatever, would they have been willing to take a chance on Mike Adams in the second, first of all? Second of all, would they have even have had the third-round draft pick to draft Sean Spence at that point? And then getting into the fourth round there, would they have even had a fourth or the ammunition? You know, would they have been willing to move up also in that round to get Alameda Ta'amu? So this whole it's mind-blowing, and it's stupid, I guess, for us to even kind of speculate. But it's amazing how something like that can change the whole complexion of the draft. And the Steelers got lucky when the Seahawks took Urban. It seems to be the first domino.
No question for things to fall the way they did. 3 things had to happen. 1, the Seahawks took Urban. 2, the Bengals rated on their board. And listen, I'm not going to be critical of the Bengals for this. They rated a guy like Zeitler pretty close to DeCastro. It may turn out that he's as good or a better guard than DeCastro. Maybe it doesn't appear that way today. We'll see what happens. But in that, they got another pick later on where they added to their defensive line. They got the defensive tackle from Clemson. So, you know, hard to criticize them for that. But then the Browns taking Weed, which I will forever, you know, or for the time being, we'll say was a crazy pick when I think they could have had him at 37. So the division guys really helped the Steelers. And then, as you pointed out, the Seahawks taking Irvin was really what cast the die and didn't allow that trade, that would-be trade, to happen. So interesting stuff, you know, as we say, it's all speculation, but it's fun to talk about. Dave, Ben gets his degree. So that makes me and Ben have something you don't.
Yeah, that's good, David. That's good. And you know what? You know the importance of that isn't, you know, let's face it, unless he pulls a TO with his money, which, by the way, how the hell do you squander $80 million, as T.O. Said on one of those talk shows, Dr. Drew or Dr. Phil or whoever he is. You know, Ben's not going to hopefully need that education, but it shows his desire to finish what he started. It sets a good, you know, if he and his wife have kids down the line, at least he'll, you know, he won't be able to, you know, say, well, I went to the NFL, that's why I didn't finish out my degree and all like that. So, you know, it sets a good precedent for him getting that. It's not anything that I don't think he needs down the line, like I said, but good for him. Props to Peter King for defending him on Twitter too. Peter King took a beating on Twitter for praising Roethlisberger going back and getting his degree.
Yeah. Dave, I'll tell you what I took out of that. I saw a picture of Ben and his wife. His wife's hot. She's hot.
Hey,
I don't know that I'd ever seen a picture. You know, they had pictures when they announced the engagement of her when she was a senior in high school or whatever. She looked great. Good for Ben on that front, too.
Yeah. Well, Mick Jagler's been married several years too, so just to some hot women, and even I was able to find myself one. But I think one thing, if you look at his graduation picture, that stuck out to me. He's wearing that one of his Super Bowl rings in there. It looks like he's got a doorknob.
I'm pretty comfortable that nobody else in the graduating class had a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what that was all about, but props to him. Now, you know, He takes a lot of hell. I've given Ben hell over the years for some of these things and all like that. But he finished what he started, and good for him. And he deserves the accolades for going back and finishing that thing up.
Dave, so now the schedule's kind of set here. The Steelers, they know what they're doing. They're going to come in and have three separate weekends. I think it's basically every other weekend of OTAs. You had written, and some guys tweeted about the fact that some of the Steelers were kicked out of the facility because of the CBA and all these things that actually protect the players. There are some things that obviously work against them, and that's because the league, the rules are stipulated so that teams can't force players to be at certain locations and have to practice a certain amount. And by doing that, you can't also let them come in and do that. So they weren't allowed in the building, so they were kicked out. But they're going to go – these things are going to start, I think, next weekend. Is that the first one, or is it 2 weekends from now?
I think it's 2 weeks, the 22nd, I believe. 2 weeks from today, as a matter of fact, is the next OTA minicamp session where the veterans will join the rookies and all like that. Interesting thing about the Clark, Wesley Saunders thing and all like that. I know Ryan Clark doesn't sit down and memorize the CBA backwards and forwards and all like that. I understand where the CBA and where the players union and all is coming from too, because look, if you let these guys work on, I have two beats with this and I'll get your take on it. First, I understand, if you make this a voluntary thing, but yet let them in there. How many teams are going to, quote-unquote, suggest that even though it's voluntary, they suggest that the players come in and do
right.
that?
Right, the guys who don't show it are disadvantaged.
Right, exactly, and kind of hang it over their head. So I can see that right there. On the flip side, wouldn't you rather, the league's pushing for player safety and all like this, wouldn't you rather your players come into your facility and work out instead of going down to the fitness, IA fitness or whatever, and working out on their own and maybe, getting off the regimen a little bit and possibly hurting themselves that way. So, that's only my beef to it there. Why not have, I don't know how you could do this, make them sign some sort of waiver or something, but then you could start suggesting that all players go in there. So I see both sides of this. It's just unfortunate that, they were willing to go in and work out, and they weren't able to work out at the Steelers facility.
Right. Yeah, I don't have a lot to add to that. I mean, these guys are professionals. I imagine when they're working out with people and know what they're doing. They've had enough instruction in their careers. So, you count on them not to get hurt, and it's their livelihood. So they're not doing it just to joke around and doing it in horseplay and stuff like that. But, it does happen. So, we'll see how it goes. These guys, so Dave, the deal is on the OTAs, it's their off-season training activities. Mike Wallace isn't going to be there. Everybody else, maybe Troy going to be there. What's the, we obviously don't know the answer for sure, but these aren't required.
Right. They're not mandatory. I think there's a mandatory one
in June
there, but outside
and
of
that's a mini camp. That's
right.
Mandatory.
And Troy in the past has chosen to work out in California and all like that. And I haven't heard if he's going to come in or not, for that either. Let's face it, some of these veteran guys, they don't need this stuff. I don't believe it'd be different if you're installing a new defense or something like that. You have the guys in Florida down there at Tom Shaw's facility down there, Ike Taylor and those guys. I wouldn't get too bent out of shape who doesn't show. In fact, I posted about Mike Wallace. I think me and you can both agreed on this going forward that we can expect him not to be around. He's on a permanent summer vacation.
He's
right
on
now.
Vacation. Mike Wallace watch is on vacation. Mike Wallace is on vacation.
And, even Ed Bouchette said, hey, when it gets to that June 15th deadline, where the Steelers can lower that tender by 110% of Wallace of last year's salary, he doesn't expect the Steelers to do that. And really, it makes sense, too. The Steelers are going to leave it alone more than likely on a good faith kind of gesture there. And, say, hey, we'll see you at training camp. Please show up on time so we can get this worked out. And a few other players, I wouldn't get too bent out of shape of who shows up and who doesn't show up. The main thing is that the rookies and some of the younger players show up. And the second main thing is that nobody gets hurt.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about all these things. Now let's just wrap up the mini camp with the rookie mini camp with two things. One is Chris Rainey and Ta'amu are both signed. The Steelers' fifth round and fourth round picks have signed their contracts. We've read and talked about Ta'amu's weight issues that seem to be not necessarily a thing of the past. Something he's got to watch. We're all aware of that. We've seen guys all over the league getting signed. Bruce Irvin, the 15th pick overall that we just spoke about, has already signed with Seattle. There have been some other high round picks signed. There's really the wiggle room and the negotiation that used to exist in this process is now virtually gone. So you're not going to have holdouts. There's very little negotiation taking place. So guys are going to get signed. It's not a big deal. We're not used to seeing guys sign this quickly, but expect this process to roll along pretty quickly. But Dave, I do have a question for you. It was posted to us on Twitter as well. The Steelers, Mike Tomlin has spoken about these workouts and said exactly what you'd expect him to say, which is essentially nothing. Guys look good, but they're in shorts. We'll wait and see what happens. Glad they're here. Blah, blah, blah. We got a lot of good work done. Did any of the guys invited to a tryout? As far as I can tell, nobody got signed to a contract because the Steelers would have to make a corresponding roster move to the 90-man. So I didn't see anything. Is there any more news on that?
I have not seen anything on that. I think the guys that were invited in were Chris Banjo was one of them, safety out of SMU, I think the Oregon quarterback Darren Thomas, and the St. John Fisher offensive lineman Corey Balzerak, along with LSU long snapper Alex Rushen. I haven't seen none of these signings. I know Corey Balzerak posted on his personal Twitter account that he did not get signed, so you can X him off. So I would not, unless you see a corresponding move on Steelers.com or on Steelers Digest Twitter feed, I don't think any of those guys got picked up, David.
Yeah, and thanks for correcting me. I think at the beginning of the show when I talked about Darren Thomas, I mistakenly said he was from Oregon State. Of course, he ran that high-powered offense for Oregon that Dennis Dixon ran as well, the guy from Oregon. I know he also has a tryout with Kansas City, I think it is, or Buffalo. He had somebody else lined up besides just the Steelers. Of course, if they had offered him a contract, maybe he just skips that tryout, but the mini camps are on different weekends, so I think he's actually going there this weekend to the other team that he has a tryout with. So that's the answer. Thanks for whoever posted that on Twitter. As far as we know, nothing done in that front. That's not really surprising. We've seen a few teams around the league sign a guy or two based on these tryouts, but not a lot of activity. Dave, there are a couple notes around the NFL as we move away from the Steelers. The Ravens, the Suggs injury is big stuff. The other thing is they've been trying to add some depth at the nose tackle position. And last week or 10 days ago, they signed Kemo's brother. I'm just going to make the assumption here that it's his brother because I think I read that in the past.
It is Maki Kemoatu.
Maki Kemoatu. He's a guy who was out of football last year, big guy, played with Carolina, has had some success. And then today, little connection to the Steelers. Today they went out and signed Ryan McBean. And Ryan McBean's an interesting case. He's a guy the Steelers drafted, I think, somewhere in the fourth round, maybe, about 5 or 6 years ago. Never really made it with the Steelers. Gets cut and then goes to Denver. Has three successful years out there. He's 28 years old. He started 21 games over the last three seasons. And he's got this suspension hanging over him that looked to be a six-game suspension. Some stuff going on in Denver. I don't remember all the exact details. But it turns out the Broncos had offered him a qualifying tender, which would have been the $1.2 million tender that many of the Steelers signed. What they did is before he signed it, they pulled it, and they went out and signed somebody else. So they actually cut him because he didn't sign his tender, and he had this suspension hanging over him. Word is now the Ravens have signed him as a nose tackle, which I don't know that he's ever played in a 3-4 at the nose position. He played at an end as the Steelers, and he was in a 4-3 with Denver. So he's going to play. They signed him as a backup nose tackle. And apparently word out of Denver on the QT is that his suspension has been reduced from 6 games to 3 games. Not a guarantee to make their roster, but interesting. He will now be in Ravens camp this coming fall.
In exchange for dropping the lawsuit, he got
Yes. Unique wording, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's more there that in exchange for a reduced suspension, he dropped his lawsuit against the NFL that alleged the league improperly handled his drug test. So
crazy stuff, right?
Oh man, I thought the National Football League was a professional organization,
right.
But Another.
That's a bad sentence for everybody.
Golly, but yeah, this is a, hey, let's look at what this signing is. First of all, it's a depth signing. He will play defensive tackle in that kind of that hybrid look of theirs, David.
Yep.
He will be a backup there. I like his chances. I like his chances to stick. Now, Maki Kimoato, he's another guy that's just going to be a body. This is a guy. I think he had knee problems.
Yes.
For several years, and Kimoato, Chris Kimoato's had knee problems as well too, and evidently in kind of the Samoans and all like that. That's a common thing with kind of that arthritic knee and all like that. So
you weigh 360 pounds, that doesn't help you any.
Yeah, exactly. And this guy's days are better days are far behind him. Just a camp body, I think, there. And now they got a hold of McBean. Who knows? Kimoato might not even make it with them to the start of training camp. But I expect Ryan McBean to hang on with him. And I bet if the Denver Broncos – I wonder if the Denver Broncos can – I doubt they can file some sort of grievance here on this. I wonder if they might not have pulled that tender offer on McBean if they knew that there was a chance that the suspension would have been dropped from 6 to 3 games.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting question. And sticking with Denver here, interesting news out of Denver today is they canned the GM. Now it's mutually agreed upon. John Elway he's been running the football operation for 2 years now. They had a guy named Brian Zander. He's a 41-year-old guy who's been there, kind of got promoted to the position when what's-his-name from New England was named a head coach, Josh McDaniel. But he never had Brian Zanders. He never had the full player personnel control. And Elway, he really taught Elway the ropes last year. And, you know, the thanks for that is now he doesn't have a job. I don't know that it's quite that harsh, but – John Elway promoted the head of college scouting to the head of professional scouting or player personnel. He brought somebody else in, an agent, to be in charge of the cap. And so Zanders wanted full player personnel control. Elway wouldn't do that. And so he said, you know, this guy's been in the league at 19. Obviously, being a GM at 41 is an impressive accomplishment. I'm sure he will find work. But, you know, Elway is really to come from being a car dealer, a couple years ago out of football with some connection to Pat Bowlen, to coming in and running this franchise. And I was pretty damn skeptical, I have to say. I don't know what trained John Elway to necessarily run a franchise. Because you're a great quarterback doesn't mean you can run a franchise. But it looks like, A, he's done a reasonable job so far, and, B, he's smart enough to get smart people around him. So he's making some decisions to get smart people around him. I don't know if there's a personality conflict in this or just the kid didn't like that, you know, he didn't get the ultimate responsibility of what a GM is supposed to get, which is player personnel. But a change in Denver, interesting time for it to happen right after the draft, but that's probably the right time for it to happen in terms of a personnel organizational move.
Yeah, and that was – I don't think Peyton Manning had anything to do with that, with them letting him go and all like that. But I think you nailed everything there is to that story with that. It is interesting, though, that Elway's putting more of his stamp on this thing now. So I guess, you know, he's not going to let what happened, with them, the drafting of Tim Tebow and all like that. That was mostly, I guess, McDaniel's doing, to my understanding. He was the one that was really hard and heavy after going after Tebow there. But just a sign that the Broncos are going to go in the direction of Elway here, I think.
Yeah, and Dave, I was thinking about this today. Football's become we know more, and it becomes less predictable, I think, about which teams are necessarily going to be good or not good or how many wins people are going to have. But a team that's really flown under the radar here in the offseason is the Chargers. And you think about the AFC West, and it's all of a sudden an interesting division. It went from a division where the Chargers were clearly the cream of the crop and couldn't get it done. Certainly, I think everybody would agree that they were the most talented team, but they didn't get it done, particularly because they couldn't win games in September and October. And now you have, you know, Peyton in Denver. You have Kansas City, which really is a good team. I think they have flown under the radar in terms of what's happened in the offseason, all the injuries they suffered last year. They're getting a lot of guys back. They've got Romeo Crennel now in place for the beginning of the year. I expect them to be a good team, depending on the play they get from the quarterback position. But the Chargers are still a talented team, and they made some interesting offseason moves. They didn't have I don't think they had a first rounder, so I'm not sure they added a ton of talent in the draft. But that division's pretty wide open. It'll be fun to watch that division, which is one we haven't spent a lot of time focusing on in the past.
Yeah, and this is it for Norv Turner, right?
He's had 27 lives.
Yeah, this is shit or get off the pot, as my old man always used to like to say for him. So you have to think that this is it for him. Phillip Rivers, boy, what a poor season he had with the interceptions and all last year. Of course, Vincent Jackson's no longer there. They brought in Robert Meacham, who I think Meacham had to have some knee work done immediately after he was signed. So there's a lot. They lost the running back through free agency as well too. There's a lot of questions that the Chargers have, and I see that they're bringing in a few defensive backs, I think, for some looks that have been recently released. They're going to have to score a bunch of points this year, I have a feeling, because like you said, Peyton Manning in that division, I think the Chiefs are going to be better. You know, they're going to get some injured players back, and Tony Moyaki, the tight end, Jamal Charles, of course.
Eric Berry, the safety.
Right. So, you know, that was a team that was snake bit with injuries at key positions last year. That is going to be an interesting division, and when you throw everything together in there, I'm not sure the Chargers have what it takes to compete in that division.
Yeah, and the Steelers will get, as you know, they'll get Denver on the opening night. The other game in that division, they're at Oakland. They get that out of the way pretty early, too. I think that's that's kind of a week three or a week five game or something like that. So the Steelers will get their AFC West out of the picture early. Taking a look at another thing, Dave, this I thought was interesting. Greg Bedard, who's been on the show, who's the beat writer for the Boston Globe covering the Patriots, was writing something last week, and it's about the New England wideouts. And when you think about New England and what's going on there, Bill Belichick brings in a lot of guys, and what he does is unique to, you know, we see him draft a rugby player in the sixth round, a guy who played, I think, three defensive snaps for Ohio State, but this guy has a skill, obviously a special teams type player that Belichick liked, and he uses a sixth round draft pick on it. This is a guy who's not going to be drafted by anybody else, but Belichick uses a sixth rounder on him. He has gone and stockpiled wide receivers this offseason. It's just crazy. And we look at the Steelers, and we've talked about the depth there, and Tony Clements, the Steelers' seventh-round pick out of Valley High and out of Colorado, has a very good chance to make this team because the Steelers they're loaded in their top four guys. I'm not sure there's a better top four in the league, but that fifth, and if there's a sixth, the receiver position is wide open, as we've talked about, and Chris Rainey. So we go to New England, and here's what New England has. They've got Wes Welker, who's franchised, and they signed Brandon Lloyd. So those are your starters. Matthew Slater, and they just signed Jabbar Gaffney, who was released by Washington, right?
Yes, they got him. Deion Branch is still there, right?
Yeah, so that's their top four. Now they got Dante Stallworth, Ocho Cinco, Julian Edelman, Deion Branch, Anthony Gonzalez from the Colts, and they used their seventh-round pick on a kid from Northwestern. That's 10 guys in camp. And, you know, you look at those guys. I'm not sure Ocho Cinco will. Well, here's what Greg Bedard said, and this is what I found most interesting about it, was he said Walker, Lloyd, Slater, and Gaffney are locks. And he put the guys in order after that as Stallworth, Ocho Cinco, and then I can't remember if it was Branch and Edelman or Edelman and Branch, and then Gonzalez, and he didn't comment on the seventh rounder. But those are real NFL guys. I always liked Anthony Gonzalez as a slot guy. He might not be exactly the type of the guy the Steelers need. Stallworth and Ocho Cinco, maybe not so much. But, again, Julian Edelman did a lot of different things for them, played some DB. Deion Branch is a veteran who's been a New England guy. You throw in all the tight ends they have, and then they signed Joseph Addai in the past week. That's a lot of familiar names to people up in New England to get that offense going again.
Absolutely. That is shocking. There's going to be one hell of a training camp battle to see what comes out of the wash there. Anthony Gonzalez, he just could never stay healthy.
Right.
You know, he has a world of talent, just never could stay healthy and never has translated over the field because of that.
Edelman, you wonder if him spending a season, you know, working with Wes Welker, he becomes, you know, the next Wes Welker. I don't know that he's quite as elusive, but he's got that short space quickness and, You know, I've always felt like he had good hands.
Well, every wide receiver is the next Wes Welker.
Oh, right, right. That's the only reason you get. That's the only reason you can stay in the league.
That's right. But listen, you know, if you're asking too about if any of these castoffs that don't make their team would be a fit for the Steelers, you know, maybe because of a fifth or sixth wide receiver spot. Let's not forget that the Steelers require their fifth and sixth wide receivers, if they choose to keep six, to be special teams guys.
Sure.
So, you know, someone like a Deion Branch, a Dante Stallworth, a Gaffney, an Ocho Cinco, these guys aren't going to play special teams.
No, the Steelers aren't going to look at those guys. The guy who would be interesting might be Julian Edelman.
Absolutely. Julian Edelman would be the guy. But you know what? With his with his position flexibility of being able to play some defense in the past, I'm willing to bet he sticks with the Patriots there. But, yeah, it's amazing. Hey, Bill Belichick does not shy away from bringing guys in to contest for competition there.
Yeah, competition, you know, that look, this is professional football. This isn't everybody gets a medal and, you know, everybody gets an at bat. This is put your best team on the field. And, look, I know, you know we talk about this and we laugh about this, Dave. You know, Steeler Nation hates the Patriots, and, we, you know, we all hate the Patriots. But, man, you got to respect Bill Belichick for what he's done. You can hate him for Spygate and all that stuff. And maybe you don't respect him. You know, maybe you don't have to respect him. But the guy's a great coach, and I like that, you know, idea of bringing guys in. They take a very different approach than the Steelers. I mean, the Steelers are bring your own guys in, blah, blah, blah. You know, this is you know how the Steelers do it. Everybody knows how the Steelers do it. The Patriots do it a different way. And, look, I think the Steelers' way is tried and proven. The Patriots way, I think you need a personnel guy like Bill Belichick and a coach like Bill Belichick to get it done. I think it's much tougher, but, you know, God bless them. They have gotten it done for, you know, 10 years now.
He's been able to show not only through the draft and trading away picks and stockpiling picks, but he can make a melting pot there out of cast-offs, other, you know, from other teams for the most part. I mean,
yeah, you see Washington's tried to do it for 10 years. They can't get it right. I mean, the other teams would try that, and they just can't get it right.
And the thing is, he never really breaks the bank either on any of these signings either, whereas Washington in the past with Daniel Snyder, he'll go out of his way to throw the type money at like the Albert Hainsworths and all like that, whereas the Patriots, you never hear of these any back-breaking, you know, cap-crunching type deals with them either. They're always guys that are always on the fringe that other teams might have given up on for the most part.
Yeah, a little bit like the Raiders of the past. I mean, you know, not quite the same thing, but we saw that in, you know, the Raiders of the 70s, just the Al Davis Raiders. We saw a lot of guys getting second chances, you know, Jim Plunkett being the ultimate guy, but, you know, plenty of others, Ted Hendricks, the guys who, you know, went out there and had success and had that team win. And it's, I think there's a lot of, we see guys, just like you said, Dave, you get somewhat cast off by organizations or they're seen as being disgruntled. Corey Dillon, Chad Ochocinco, although, you know, Dillon was productive, Ochocinco not so much last year. But Belichick's willing to bring him in, and Ochocinco made the roster, but he's gonna have to work his ass off to make it this year.
Absolutely. Look at the defensive side of the ball. They brought in I like to call him Barbie Carpenter. Of course, they drafted Dante Hightower. You know, they got a couple of cast-offs over on the defensive side of the ball as well, too. And it doesn't hurt when you're able to draft a guy on offense like Rob Gronkowski, what he's done. Of course, Aaron Hernandez over there, the other tight end. The Patriots are going to continue to compete. Joseph Addai is just another classic veteran ad for them, a guy that's going to get probably 10 touches a game. And Belichick's proven he's not afraid to go with the hot hand in the backfield.
Yeah, I don't know that I see the competition for them in the East again. You know, Buffalo did some good things. Ryan Fitzpatrick's got to play like he did the first six games, not in the last 10. They got Mario Williams on the defensive side of the ball. That's a great signing for them. But, you know, the Jets, all sorts of question marks around the Jets. Really don't know what to expect. I'll be entertained watching the TiVo stuff. And, you know, as much as anybody else, I'll enjoy seeing how that plays out just because it's an interesting story. The Dolphins with Tannehill and Matt Moore, even though as much of a Matt Moore fan as I am, you know, that team's going to struggle to win eight games. They're solid defensively. But, yeah, you know, Patriots you go in again as clearly the class of that division.
Love to hate him. Love to hate him. Love to hate Belichick, too, you know. So you got to tip your hat to him, but doesn't mean I hate him. I just don't like the guy. I don't like how he treats the media the whole nine yards there. But, you know, tip a hat to him.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to look at my 53-man roster prediction real quick?
I have it here in front of me. I haven't scoured it with the usual the way I should so far, but I do have it in front of me.
A couple things I think a couple of people have pointed out here through the comment section and all like that. I think people are kind of asking about the running back situation. You know, would you agree that, you know, the likelihood of them keeping four, and that includes Chris Rainey, would you consider that a likelihood considering Mendenhall starts the year on PUP?
If you're counting Rainey, it's going to be at least four. I think if you know, Rainey in the receiver group.
I'm counting Rainey as a running back.
Yeah, well, they're definitely going to keep four.
Okay.
I think the question is, will they keep five in the sense of will they keep both Clay and Dwyer? Obviously, Redmond's going to make the team. And then, you know, Batch. You know, could those be the four? And Rainey is, as we've said 100 times now, the and Chris Rainey, the kind of swing return man receiver running back.
Absolutely. And you nailed you talked about the receiver situation. I think in all likelihood they keep five and Chris Rainey, as we like to say. I think there's definitely that last spot that I currently have Tony Clemens in up for grabs there. The offensive line is pretty much set in stone. The only question is, will Max Starks be brought back? And if Max Starks isn't, where does that extra tackle position go to? You know, I think keeping nine offensive linemen is realistic there. The only other battle on offense, I think, where there's a lot of mystery surrounding going forward is the tight end position. You have Heath Miller, and then you have a lot of question marks out of there. Is Leonard Pope going to be the guy that's his backup there? Can David Paulson make the roster as a seventh round draft pick? And what kind of plans do the Steelers have in store for David Johnson? Does he even match what Todd Haley wants to do? Is a guy like Will Johnson, who's a lot more mobile, presents a little bit more of a mismatch coming out of the backfield, might not be as good a blocker. How does he figure into it? But
well, that's interesting, Dave, because, you know, we often, as we were talking about it this past year, the last two position spots weren't really two guys battling for the same position. We were talking about, you know, Will Allen, Arnez Battle, different linebackers. There were guys who were going to be the 52nd and 53rd man, and it's where you're going to carry the extra player and what's their value on special teams. So when you present it like that, you know, maybe David Johnson is battling Baron Batch for a roster position.
That very well could be, and we don't know.
Depending on how Haley wants to do it, just as you said.
Right. We don't know if Johnson's primarily going to be listed as a fullback, which I can't see him being a tight end or a move type joker type guy in the Todd Haley system. You know, David Johnson gets real limited kind of quick there, you know, assuming that's how Haley goes. So, yeah, a lot of your 50, 51 through 53 guys, as you said, are going to be special teams guys. This comes into the play, you know, if the Steelers maybe possibly keeping, one, two, three, four, five cornerbacks, or maybe they keep five safeties. Here's another thing to think about on the initial 53 too, Dave. Ryan Clark's going to miss that first game in Denver because of sickle cell. So the Steelers normally like to carry only four safeties, or they have the last few seasons on the roster when they break camp. So now are they going to have to be forced to keep five safeties on the roster for the sheer fact that Ryan Clark's going to be down week one?
Yeah, you know, I got to think there with Peyton Manning, they're probably just as happy to go with the extra corner on the field. So, but it'll be an interesting decision, and it's one that they'll know. I mean, obviously Ryan Clark will be on the 53-man and not activated. So don't have a strong feeling about that. But, yeah, that you know, that's something, the great thing. You know, obviously the good thing is they get to plan for that. They get 4 months to plan for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's a lot of names on my list that can be debatable. This is, of course, a 53-man roster prediction being done after the draft in the early part of May. So, you know, a lot of things are going to change, like it or not. Who knows who gets injured going forward. If you want to take a look at this, several people have already commented. It's up on SteelersDepot.com. David and I will probably dive more into the defensive side of the ball in the next podcast here, but always open to feedback on this as well.
Dave, great stuff. I think that covers most of what's been happening since last Friday. So we'll be back at you next Friday. Once again, thank you for your donations. Thank you for your support. Please pass this around to anybody you know is a Steeler fan. You can follow Dave at Steelers Depot on Twitter, and I'm at Hammer Speaks. I think I'm still having Twitter envy. I think you guys need to maybe create some dummy accounts and just fill it up. I got more people following me on the Pirate stuff than the Steeler stuff. I might have to change my handle, Dave. I mean, like, you know, this is killing me. But anything you want to close with?
Yeah, we found out that if you have the TuneIn Radio app, they picked up the Terrible Podcast on there. That's a very popular app for getting radio stations and archive podcasts. We found out that we're listed there. So if you're having problems getting a podcast on one of your mobile devices or whatnot, download the TuneIn Radio app and just do a search for the Terrible Podcast in there. Once again, yeah, follow David on Twitter. You can follow the show on Twitter at Terrible Podcast. Emails go to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to buy David a beer or buy me a cup of coffee, you can donate through PayPal at the email address admin@SteelersDepot.com.
All right, great stuff. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.